at an inflection point and how we, each of us, leaders, managers, employees, and voters, board members, respond to this moment will determine what happens in the economy and to the planet. Really, 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 really. We can make this a winning moment, as my guest today will explain, and frankly, I agree. But only if we seize the opportunities to let the need to be more environmentally and socially responsible inspire us to innovation that makes our lives better, our businesses stronger, and our economy stronger. And you have heard me talk about this before, but I am passionate about it. And today's guest is perfect to talk to about it. This applies to boards of directors, as well as leaders and managers, and the rest of us. We face a lot of pressures. But as Steve Jobs and even Einstein and other innovators will attest, pressure can make us better and make us grow faster. So today we're going to find out how from one of the pioneers around the world. So pull up a chair and listen up. Welcome to Electric Ladies Podcast. We bring you insights and tips from remarkably innovative women about corporate responsibility, energy, sustainability, and ESG issues. I'm your host, Joan Michelson. We talk about innovation, leadership, technologies, and careers, always bringing a new perspective. Find us anywhere you like to listen to podcasts on our website, electricladiespodcast.com, and through my Forbes column as well. And please pass it on to your friends and give us a 5-star review and tell us what you like about the show. I spoke at a conference recently and people came up to me and gave me great insight. So we want to hear from you. And of course, if you're struggling with your own career, please also reach out to us on Twitter at Joan Michelson. We can help. So there is pressure coming from the planet, as we see in the massive devastation from the much more powerful and more frequent and destructive hurricanes, droughts, and wildfires that are bringing communities to their knees. Pressure is coming from the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, and in the U.S. and regulators around the world with the new climate risk disclosure rules, and the SECs are coming any minute now, really. There's pressure coming from investors who want more disclosure and accountability in ESG performance. That's environment, social, and governance performance, for those who don't know the acronym. There's pressure coming from employees who want to work for companies and employers who align with their environmental and social values and who hold themselves accountable. And then the huge 2022 Edelman Trust Barometer study is really interesting because it found that we actually trust business more than any other sector. Who knew, right? More than government, more than nonprofits even, much less more than the media. It found that, quote, businesses are the most trusted institution in the country today to 61% of the 36,000 plus people who responded to the survey. And 77% of them trust their own employer the most. Who knew? So business has a unique role to play to address climate change, the UN Sustainable Development Goals, and to make our world a better place. It's not just about profits anymore. And boards of directors are being held to account like never before. So how do we maximize this opportunity? Let's ask an expert. I'd like you to meet Helen Jorgensen, a 30-year veteran of leveraging ESG risks into innovative and profitable business opportunities that work for everyone and the planet. She works with many global Fortune 500 board members and executives, as well as smaller companies and investors. She's the founder and CEO of Competent Boards, which offers online climate and ESG programs based on the experience of many people in this space. Her resume goes on for days, so I will try to find some highlights and not put you to sleep, but she serves on ESG and sustainability-related councils at NASDAQ, the World Economic Forum, with His Royal Highness Prince of Wales, which is interesting. We could do 4 shows on that alone, as chair of the advisory committee of the ESG Exchange. And in the past, she's been on the sustainable advisory panel of the AICPA, American Association of Certified Accountants. Really amazing. She's trained as a lawyer and accountant and has an MBA, way too much education, my friend. Before starting Competent Board, she was an auditor and advisory partner at PwC in Denmark, one of my favorite countries, and in the United States, leading their sustainability and climate practice. She's also the author of a new book called Stewards of the Future, A Guide for Competent Boards. Whew, Wow, Helly. I had the privilege of meeting Helly recently at the Greenfin Conference, and I knew I had to have you meet her on Electric Ladies Podcast. So without further ado, welcome, Helly. Thank you for joining us on Electric Ladies Podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Joan, and thanks for that long introduction. My mom is proud, okay?
Well, there you go. You know, it's multidimensional, so I was shortening it to help me out here. So I want to start off with where you think we are now. You know, at this moment, as we're recording this, where are we in this inflection point? What do you see in the work that you're doing with executives, boards, and regulators and investors around the globe? Tell us what you see right now.
I see a lot of movement. I see a lot of really wanting to understand the subject matters, really want to build resiliency into the system. And I think the pandemic have taught us shine a light on a lot of things that we now say, are we really as resilient as we thought we were? We have the geopolitical issues in the world, and we have so many issues as you were listing up in terms of climate and impact of much more severe weather events. That's not only an impact on our infrastructure and the assets of businesses, but also of employees, also of the customers and the suppliers. And it's not just now, it's also what would that look like in the future. So I think what we see right now is clearly it's different around the world. And you know that I have a board of directors and business leaders from all around the world joining our programs. So it's different places, but every place you look around, it's like you get more regulation, but you get also many more companies and leaders to say, are we part of the solution or are we part of the problem? And that mindset is starting to then, as you were also pointing to the investors, are pushing this agenda, as you said, the regulators, the future, our kids and grandkids, for some, right? That really saying this is the world we also going to live in. And we like it or not, you know, they are the future. They are the ones that will, buy our products. They are the ones that will take on the leadership positions. They are the ones that will finance companies in the future. So we are in a very, very, very interesting point. We clearly also have a lot of clashes happening at the moment. There's a lot of debate on what you say, ESG, environment, social governance. And the only one that's not really debating is Mother Nature, but I think Mother Nature is debating in her own way and sending us not only signals but actually invoices at the moment, and we better listen and either pay up now or we will pay much more later.
Yeah, no, that's a great framing. It sounds like you're hearing this from the audiences that you talk to. What are when executives and board directors or boards that are looking to bring on new directors, when they come to you and they talk about the top issues to them, are these the top issues to them, or what exactly do they say? Like, what kinds of words do they use?
Well, I think, you know, Joan, we're taking board of directors and executives through our education programs, where it's everything from geopolitical issues, how do we deal with dilemmas, how do we think the unthinkable, you know, the climate, the ESG, human rights issues, diversity, equity, inclusion, supply chain issues, cybersecurity, integrity of data, incentive plans. You know, all of those, the future of good corporate governance, transparency, anti-corruption, all of those different issues that have been there for a long, long time, but been kind of like voluntary more and less. And suddenly they are really coming at the top of the agenda for the board of directors. Add to that, that we have for a long time had fantastic teams in many companies that have put out sustainability reports and said all the good things. And from time to time, those fantastic people have been getting a few minutes of the time for the executives at the board when we win an award, but not necessarily having the time from the rigor, the systems, the finance, going in and checking, okay, what are we really saying here? Do we have the proof of what we are saying? And this is where I use my accounting background. And so suddenly now you're starting to see the regulations. You said the SEC, but we're seeing regulations all over the world. And you start to see that it goes from being, we are informing about all of these things, and some will call that, some of it, greenwashing. And suddenly you need to start having the rigor. So clearly from a board of directors point of view, one, you need to kind of like have the insight. And you need to have the foresight. The reason why I started Competent Boards was, I said, how can you make informed decisions if you're not informed? And so you need to have all of this insight in the boardroom. You don't need to be experts, but you need to have that insight. And the same goes for the C-suite and those that would like to have a board position, right? So by having that, then now you can start asking the right questions and ensuring that, do we have the information that we need, and can we trust that information? You mentioned Edelman survey in terms of how much do we trust businesses compared to others. That's another part, is that we as business leaders, with that trust, with that power that business leaders have, comes responsibility. And you are seeing more and more being held accountable, being that the board of directors, being that the C-suite, being that the companies were saying, so how do you really do this? Are you part, as I said, part of the problem or part of the solution? That's very broad, but in reality, you need to start having that debate in the boardroom, in the C-suite, and say, not only what's the purpose of the business, but what's the purpose of us as leaders? Where do we want to bring this business? And then you can start putting up your visions and your scenario plans and say, where is it we want to take this business? And what are the constraints of doing that? How do we ensure we are resilient? How do we ensure that we actually have that insight to get that strategy from where we are now to where we want to go? And how do we get our employees? How do we get our customers? How do we get those that finance us and suppliers, everyone else with us on that journey? And I think that's it's a fascinating time at the moment, because it's not business as usual. You need resilient people. You need to people that think a little bit different as well. And you need to, think the unthinkable, as one of our faculty members, Nick Gowing, say, think the unthinkable. And yes, you mentioned all of these, I think we say over 180 global, board members, executives, experts, investors that are, helping in terms of delivering these education programs. So it's a fascinating time where you have so much coming at the board of directors, so much coming at the leadership, so much that from a leadership position, you need to look at all of these dilemmas and then figure out, what's the way we want to go?
Yeah, but are they? I mean, the you can say that. And also when you say, where do we as individuals want to take the company? They have a fiduciary responsibility to the company's history and future, not just to their own personal values. They can, Bill Ford has been an advocate for environmentalism forever and a day. But, even though they're a publicly traded company, his name is on the door, literally, right? It's his family. And so it's a little bit different. But, if I'm the CEO of Procter & Gamble, my name is not on the door. And, my job, or I'm on the, chairman of the board, my job is to make sure that this company, just to play devil's advocate, makes money, keeps people employed, and, sells toilet paper and perfume and shampoo, et cetera. So why... my personal values are fine, but I have a fiduciary responsibility to the company and to the shareholders. So where does that how do they separate their own from them? And I love that you're talking about what they should do, but I want to talk about what they're doing.
And they should not separate those two points. And let me go back. So, I started my work in sustainability area over 30 years ago. I did the first green account for a steelwork, actually, and integrated report. And when we started seeing sweatshops, I worked with companies to say, how do we ensure that we're not going to be accused of human rights abuse and child labor and all of those areas. And I think I go back, it was very much that, well, if you want to do what was called the right thing, it comes with a cost. That's disappearing. Because again, going back to saying, who is it? If you look at the, from an employee point of view, look at the great resignation or great reshuffling, right? You have employees that want to give their insight. They want to bring their innovation. They want to bring all of that to companies that have the same values as them. I think we saw during the pandemic that people that was working, in their living room, that they couldn't just sit in front of the screen and suddenly have different kind of values. And I think that's kind of like you're starting to see that people say, hey, where is it really I want to give, my time, etc. So that's one parameter. Then start looking at the consumers. And I mentioned the younger people before. That's a huge group that are, most of them are very focused on what are they buying, who are they buying from, what's the impact of the products that they are buying. Add to that women. Women are often also more inclined to look for something that is healthy for both themselves and for their family and for the planet. So women, I think, responsible for about 60% of the purchases. So just there, you have a big business case for having products that you can sell that people actually want to buy, both now and in the future. Then go to those that are financed the business, the investors, the banks, and start asking them what they're looking for. And then you can say, well, that's all great. That's kind of like, that's the outward looking, that's the business, consumer business. But those businesses have their code of conducts, where they are going to whoever their suppliers are and saying, if you're supplying to us, here is what we need to make sure that you have in terms of sustainability matters, climate matters, etc. So they're using the power of procurement. So you have kind of like that. I'm not saying that this is all businesses, but if you start looking at it as way of actually staying both resilient and staying relevant as a business, it's hard to say, oh, we couldn't care less about, what it is that our customers want. We couldn't care less about what it is our employees want. We couldn't care less about what it is that those that finance our business.
Yeah, it's not an option. So what about, what do people say to you about, we're in a period of inflation there, some countries are in recession, that's great, when things are going well, but, I hear you that, I have to do this in order to keep people, but, unemployment's going to go up and, people are going to be looking for jobs and that leverage is going to go away. I mean, that's, kind of put to the side. How do you respond to that argument about inflation and maybe a conflict between ESG and inflation/recession?
I think it depends what kind of businesses. So many of the businesses that have embedded, that have the mindset, that have embedded sustainability, where sustainability matters are not an afterthought. That's now ingrained in what they do. They have probably saved a lot of money already. They probably much more efficient in what they do. So they are actually more resilient to go into a situation that we are looking into right now. You're totally right. I mean, we can sit here and say, oh, we need to do all of these, but cash, you want to make sure that you can actually pay whatever you need to pay, etc. And that's the same when pandemic hit. I said, you know, cash is king, but care is queen. And I think that is not going to go away. You can say, yes, right now, we might be looking into tough times, etc. But you still want to have the best employees, right? You still want to have the customers. And if we don't care about our employees and we don't care about our customers and we don't care about our suppliers, why should they care about us? So it's two different mindsets, right? There's a mindset of saying, okay, let's just cut. And then, yes, we have a financial viable, but for how long? Versus having a company that are reducing cost, increasing innovation, increasing, you know, employees' engagement, having the employees going out and saying, you know, the things you want to hear about the business, having customers really saying, I like this business. I want to support this business. Having suppliers going out and say, you know, we want to supply you because you were there for us when we needed you. And having the financial institution say, yeah, you actually have a good transition plan. And you've been showing that you're going the right direction. We believe that you will also be a viable and successful business, a resilient business in the future.
Yeah, it definitely reduces the risk, for the financial risk. I mean, that's what's behind the SEC rules, right? So thank you for that. I appreciate that. I love that cash is king, but care is queen. And that goes to care writ large, which you and I could talk about forever as well. Speaking of the SEC rules, just give me a quick take on what you think of the proposed rules and where you think they'll land.
Oh, if I knew. So let's just look around the world, right? There are regulation coming up everywhere. So if we look at it from a company, let's just say a company in the US, but are selling in Europe. Well, you want to look at the regulations in Europe, right? We have regulations coming up all over the world. So yes, we also have the SEC regulation, and there's a lot of debate on that right now. I think it's hard to say that is going to not come through in one form or another, because the rest of the world is going that direction, right? So successful companies that are, you know, in terms of the SEC regulation, successful companies are already looking at this and saying, how do we ensure we report? Some of them have already reported, right? Clearly there's a difference between reporting in a 10K and then reporting in a voluntary sustainability report with perhaps some nice pictures So that's the rigor that I talked about before.
Have to be verified by accountants and others. So that's the huge difference.
Yeah, but again, and that's where, you know, going back to what I say with the board of directors and the management team and why we are training so many directors and so many potential directors and business professionals are to understand all of this, are to make sure that they ask the right questions, but also know kind of like what are the answers that we can be expecting. Because if you're as a director and you know, management are signing off on these, you want to know that you can trust this, or at least where is it that there's something that is perhaps that you need to dig a little bit more into. That should have happened before. Right. So it's kind of like just saying, okay, we're taking this to the next level. we always seen that there's voluntary things popping up, and those companies that are starting on that voluntary, well, they get to try, right? They get to test, they get to train on how to do it. So when it's there, well, then they're in a much better position. It's not different than if you and I said, hey, let's start running a marathon. You know, if we start training a little bit for that marathon, we're probably a better chance of getting through it with a good result than if we wait to the last second.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of companies that have been reporting it, but as you say, they've been, shall we say, selective in what they've reported, but having to have it withstand the rigor of the SEC and other regulators, and having to have it be verified and trackable. You know, what ends up in your 10K is pretty different, right? So I'll be curious to see what they land on. I interviewed Christina Wyatt, who you and I both met at Greenfin, and so you might want to listen to that episode too. But I want to ask you a couple things and then get some career advice from you before I let you get back to your day. You know, one of the things that doesn't get talked about much, and I kind of touched on it a little bit, but I want to zero in on it, is conflicting objectives. So when leaders and directors and investors are making a decision, it's not a black and white decision ever, right? But especially now, and especially in economic turmoil and political turmoil, you know, as we're going through in many parts of the world. So how do you suggest that companies frame a decision that has, in effect, conflicting objectives? So, you know, you've got the Biden administration has a very strong climate-focused, ESG-focused agenda, and they have to deal with inflation and deal with the crazies who are climate deniers. The UK is now on their third prime minister in like a year or something crazy. So, you know, they each have their own agenda, and they're also dealing with 10% inflation, much higher, much, much higher than ours, et cetera, political turmoil. And they have, the king is now king instead of having lost Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. And so, you know, and then the war in Ukraine, et cetera. So how do you suggest that companies, and we'll talk about Ukraine in a minute, but how do you suggest that leaders, these are human beings, think about a decision that has two conflicting objectives?
It's a really, really good question. And let me just come back to where we just talked about the regulations, because that is kind of like the compliance. And there's one thing that I'm a little bit afraid of in terms of all of the regulations, and that is that we only look at the compliance and saying, okay, can we comply with this tick mark, and then forget actually what you're asking about now? How do we make decisions that are, as to our best knowledge, keep us as resilient as possible? And to do that, you need to know your business very well. You need to know the scenarios for your business well. And to do that, you need to know who are your key stakeholders today and tomorrow, and what is it that they care about. You want to know how is it that your company is going to be impacted or is impacted by being that the geopolitical issues, climate related issues, and we can go on and all of this. So now you have your basis in saying, okay, what is it that is best for both our company and the stakeholders, our key stakeholders? And then you make decisions on that basis, and you explain that decision. And yes, you know, I think most people would like to have a level playing field and would like to know, what does this look like X number of years? And instead of this, where we're going kind of like, oh, is it going to go that way or that way? Or are we going to have regulation? I'm not going to have regulation. I wish, and again, when we talk about all of these things in the ESG Competent Board's designation and the certificate programs, and as for that matter, the climate programs, right? It's what is it that's relevant for the business, and how do we deal with those dilemmas that you're talking about? But because we also have a group of board members and executives, etc., from all over the world, There's also something about learning from each other and figuring out, oh, how do others deal with this? And then I think, you know, figuring out what is the best way forward. We need to be agile in this. We need to be resilient. If you look at the playbook that you have used the last couple of years or last 10 years or something like that, it's not going to work. So I don't think any of us have that kind of like, but you need to have, what is the purpose? You need to have the values, you need to have the culture, you need to have that insight that can inform what are the right decisions for us right now. And then you need to have the board of directors, as said, that's not only informed, but can go in and ask the questions and ensure we are on the right journey and course correct as we go on that journey. I think there's a lot of things that we know at the moment that we as business leaders need to have an eye on. And then there's some unknowns. But if I'm known for saying, you know, luck favored the prepared. So if we at least are prepared for those things we can be prepared for, then we have much more capacity to take in when suddenly something happens that we're not prepared for. And if we've been thinking that.
And the pandemic was an example of that, because the companies that had, in some ways, the companies that had high ESG ratings fared better during the pandemic, in part because they inherently think more long term, they think about reducing risk, they had diversified their supply chains and weren't as dependent upon distant supply chains that crashed during the pandemic. So yeah, I loved your line, luck favors the prepared. There's also, I think, the Chinese symbol for luck is the symbol for opportunity and the symbol for preparation, if I have my memory serves me.
And on that, you can say, hey, you can also use it every side of where you see risk. There is an opportunity, but there's only an opportunity if you are ahead of that and have seen the risk and can turn that risk into an opportunity. And I think that's, again, for those that are informed, for those that are, you know, thinking about these issues. And again, I mean, you asked me in terms of all of these board of directors and executives and business leaders going and investors, by the way, going through the programs, they suddenly get that mindset, can see what are the opportunities out there, and can therefore actually drive their businesses to what you said before, shareholder value, as well as the stakeholder value that you know so beautifully are actually connected more and more now.
Yeah, intricately, right? So just really quickly, I would be remiss if I did not ask you about the war in Ukraine and managing that as a business leader. Full disclosure, my maternal grandparents were from Ukraine. They were born in Kiev and outside of it. And my paternal grandparents were from Latvia, Lithuania. So I'm especially attuned to it. I've done a lot of stories on it and talked to my consulting clients about it. And I've written about how you can look at it from the geopolitical decision from an ESG framework, which is interesting that you said that in a different way a minute ago. But talk to me about how, you know, that's one of those places where there could be conflicting objectives, because on one hand, you want to reduce your carbon footprint and use, you know, less fossil fuels. On the other hand, you're getting cut off and you want to reduce your dependence on Russia, but Russian oil, but at the same time, you don't have all the infrastructure in place to replace that with renewables yet. And you want to not support Russia, of course. So if you were talking to a group of business leaders about, you know, how should we do this and what, you know, boards to frame it? Obviously, there's the right thing to do to help the people of Ukraine and protect democracy, but they also have to protect their energy supply. So how do they do that? What's the framing that you suggest?
Well, first and foremost, I definitely hear you. And I think I was actually in the UK when when the invasion happened, and I went to I had a meeting scheduled with Martin Wolf from Financial Times, who is one of the of our faculty members, and so I went to see Martin, and of course we talked about this if, and not everything else we had planned to talk about. And one of the questions I asked was, how, what, as board members, you know, I have this faculty, I have all of these alumni from the program. What can we as collectively, you know, how should we act in a situation like this? Basically, I invited all of the alumni and all of the faculty, et cetera, to a session Monday morning. This was a Friday, so we discussed, and one of the things that came out of that, and I have on my LinkedIn, I have actually the output of that meeting. I think it's on there. But you know, one of the things was that we said, like, okay, we need to say that if this doesn't stop, then we will stop, you know, all interactions with Russia, et cetera, within, I think it says, 6 months. That happened within 6 days, right? Clearly, as you're getting at, well, now this has been going on for a long time, and you start to see, okay, how do we ensure it's probably not going to be this winter, but next winter that really going to be cold? Clearly, you have a lot of, it's unbelievable to and it's heartbreaking in terms of what's going on at the moment. You have some real dilemmas at the moment you need to look at. And I don't think you can talk to any of the leaders in Europe without they saying, why were we not better prepared on this? And now we need to make some of those decisions. But I can also tell you, everyone I talk to, they're, you know, really dialing up on making sure that they are prepared in the future and actually putting more efforts into it. But none of us can do this and have it happen in a day. And that's also why I'm some from time to time when I'm talking to companies and they say, well, we can't make this happen from day to day. I'm like, no, but it's a transition plan, right? And saying, how are you ensuring that where you are now to where it is, we're going? What does that transition plan look like?
Well, and yes, you can say it can't happen like this, but what happens like this is the outcome of a series of decisions that get made. So you can't put off the decision, this decision, that decision, the next decision, the next decision, because they all lead to someplace. And so you can't just throw your hands in the air. I mean, you know, Angela Merkel might regret now going off of nuclear after, you know, entirely after Fukushima, because that would have saved a lot. But, you know, who knew, right?
Yeah, and I think you know, another one of faculty members that used to be the chair of Unilever, and I also have Paul Polman in the faculty, but the chair of Unilever once said to me, you know, Ella, we can't do all of these long-term things right without doing the right short-term things. So we need to ensure that we kind of like plan this, and that's why I'm saying transition plan is not like only saying, oh, this is where we want to be in 2050, right? Where none of us are in the positions we're in right now. It's like, what do we want to do right now? But if we had those scenarios in front of us, we could actually say, what are we going to do in a given situation? And there are actually, you know, Shell actually put together their 2025 scenarios, what, 17 years ago. And one of those scenarios, unfortunately, very, very close to what we're looking at the moment.
Really?
So,
Well, Walmart's been doing Sustainable Supplier Index for 20, 25 years, so.
yeah. So there's a lot that where, you know, going back to my luck favorite, the prepared, but you know, you want to make sure that you look into those different aspects and really have that discussion. So that's why I'm saying we need to ensure that the, going back to the board, the C-suite, the management, everyone, and investors for that matter, are informed and can ask the right questions and therefore make sure that we get to the right outcome, both in the short and in the long term.
Yeah, and they have to make sure that their teams are giving them the right information. I think a lot of times what I run into is they don't know what the right information is, and then when they think about it, they just think that they can't get it, or they raise all kinds of obstacles about getting it, and you and I could talk about that offline as well. So in closing, before I let you go, I like to give career advice to women, particularly women in mid-career, and you've had such a fascinating journey because you've been a pioneer in the space, which is now like the hot career, and you took a big risk to leave the comfy, cozy nest of a partnership role at a big four firm. I worked at Deloitte, so I understand, although I'm not an accountant, to go off on your own and take a huge risk to do that. So what advice would you give to a woman in mid-career, say 15 years of experience? She has an education. She knows what she's good at. She has a lot of experience, but she wants to make a difference with who she is and what she knows how to do. And she's ambitious and wants to make money. So it's not a matter of just doing it on the side, you know, as a avocation. What advice would you give her for her career?
I'm getting a lot of those questions, and you know, I'm getting people that want to come and work with us because of that impact we are having, because of that opportunity of actually doing that, but also work with other companies. So first of all, I'm sound like a broken record here, but I would, if that's, you know, making a difference, having an impact, working in this environment, social governance space, is make sure that you actually get the education. Yes, that's self-serving. You can, of course, come to us, but just to make sure that it's not like, oh yeah, I also heard, you know, 1 hour of something and now I know everything, because that's not going to help anyone. But I think I would also, from a career perspective, say, what is it really you want, right? If you look 5 years out, 10 years out, what is it that you want to look back at and say, yes, I was part of this, or I did this all by, you know, went out and did something on your own. Is it within technology? Is it within helping people that need help? I mean, there's a ton of roles, and you know, I think you mentioned the sustainable development goals at some point, and if you look at the 17 biggest pain points in the world, 17 goals, but also the 17 biggest pain points, and saying, okay, where is it that I can do a difference, right? So it can be everything from being looking at those and say, I can do a difference when it comes to education or to many of the other areas, to saying, I want to educate myself in this, so I can go out and help organizations, perhaps even the organization that you're working in right now, right? Or I would like to be a board member in the future, and how, you know, educate in that way. Or, oh, I want to go out and together with others and say, hey, can we invest in something together? There's no lack of opportunities. And yes, you're right. From time to time, you go like, poo, I go like, poo, you know, but it's a decision. And I think, again, I'm saying the path to a sustainable future, I think that is paved by education, and that's what we do, right? But there's so much else that can be done out there.
Oh, that's great. That's really helpful. Yeah, I'm a big proponent of that as well. Of course, I'm an information junkie, so there you have it.
And I think, I mean, especially women that go through the program, I mean, what I hear over and over is that, well, this gave me both the inside and the foresight that I've been talking about. It gave the network around the world, but it gave the confidence.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Exactly. I totally agree with you. It, you know, it's interesting. When I got my MBA, a whole lot of questions that had appeared never appeared again. And I don't know if it was my way of being, but it's like people see some kind of credential. You know, there's a lot of talk right now about is college worth it? And, you know, do we need all these, you know, letters and certificates, whatever? And I think it says something. It's an example. It's a, how can I say this? It's a symbol of what you know. To that point, just before I let you go and get some final thoughts, do you think that getting some kind of certification in ESG reporting like the GRI ones, or I think SASB has one, I mean, a whole bunch of places have actual certifications in doing these reports. Do you think those are useful?
I think if you want to kind of like in terms of the reporting, yes. And hey, the competent boards designation and certificate programs in ESG and climate, I know they are very, very useful for those that want to have positions in that. There's a little bit of reporting in that, but clearly, you know, the GRI, the ISSB, there's a lot of, in terms of the SASB that's now part of the ISSB. This is where we get to the alphabet soup, different out there. So I think, again, depending on what it is if reporting, yes, go into those. If it's more general and management and knowing all of these subjects, knowing the risk, knowing the opportunities, I would point to the ESG Competent Boards certificate and designation programs and the climate programs.
Well, no, but that's a good, your point, besides the ad for your own courses, is well taken, and the point being that it depends on what your goal is, right? If your goal is to get good at doing reports, that's one thing. If your goal is a leadership role, that's something else, right? So thank you so much, Helly, for joining us today. Any final thoughts before I let you get back to your day?
I love what you're doing. And I would love to interview you on all of the things that you're doing and how much fun you're having, because I think you're really having a huge impact. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Helly. Thank you so much. So let's thank Helly Jorgensen, our founder and CEO of Competent Boards, for joining us today on Electric Ladies Podcast. So what do you think? How do you think your company can be a better steward, as the title of her book says? Do you think your company should take on that role of even being a steward? Tell us on Twitter at Joan Michelson, and you might win a 30-minute coaching session with me through our drawing. And please subscribe to our mailing list to stay abreast of our 370 plus talented, amazing guests like Helle and our blogs, etc. And you can easily subscribe to the newsletter on our website at electricladiespodcast.com. I'm Joan Michelson. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.